Okay, we are here with Bill Provinger, President and CEO of Carey's Small Arms Range Ventilation. Bill, how long have we known each other?
Probably since 2001.
It's been a good time. Bill, how many years have you been working on HVAC systems and units?
I started in HVAC in 1975 and started doing gun ranges in 1995.
What is having a specialized ventilation system in a range even necessary?
It is. In a small arms range, there are three reasons why we ventilate with a specialized system. The first reason is to remove contaminant from the respiratory zone of the occupants of the range. The second reason, which is equally as important, is to keep contaminants created in the range from leaving the range area and going to other parts of the building where they can collect on surfaces and be ingested. And the final reason, obviously, is so you can see your targets.
Excellent. And also the safety, I guess, of your customers and your staff, and it serves all kinds of purposes there.
Absolutely.
As far as the critical components, what do you have as far as it makes up a system?
The makeup of a range ventilation system is you have to have a supply unit, an exhaust unit with filtration. Control system is a very critical part. So probably the most important parts of the system are the properly engineered laminar flow at the firing line and a good control system to control the system and the pressures in the space.
You said laminar. What's laminar mean?
Laminar is even, or basically another way to say it is a lack of turbulence.
Okay.
Smooth.
With the control system, what are you able to do or look at as far as a range owner or you as the president of the company? What can you dial in and look at? I need to give it time.
With a range ventilation, with a good digital control system, when we started out, we used to do dial-in through the phone lines. Now we actually come in through the computer, through an internet connection. And what we can see in a system is all of the operating parameters, so any point we're monitoring. So we can see the outside temperature, the discharge temperature, the pressure in the space, the range pressure versus the non-range areas. So we can see if the range is negative. We can see the filter condition. We can see the run hours, and on and on. There's probably 80 to 100 points in a system that we can monitor. Another unique feature is if you're having a problem and you say, geez, Bill, every day at 2 o'clock my system shuts off, we can do trending where we can look at the system every 3 seconds, every 6 minutes, anything in between, and we can look at data trends so we can see what's happening. We've found fluctuations in neighborhoods voltage that has caused systems to shut down every day at the same time, but it's a phenomenal service tool. It also gives you access so that 24 hours, 7 days a week, if you have an issue with your system, it allows us to be there to support you. And if there's an adjustment we can make to get you through to closing time, we do that. And if you need a serviceman, we let you know where he has to look, saving hours of service time and money.
So you can actually ramp up the speed of the fan over the internet?
Absolutely.
Holy cow. Okay, excellent. You were talking about filters earlier. What's the importance of having a filter system in there? Why can't you just discharge it out in the backyard?
On a purely technical basis, if you measured the contaminant in the exhaust air of a system, it won't be over EPA allowable limits for discharging your space. What happens over the years is there's a buildup of lead in the small amounts you discharge on the surfaces, which end up way over EPA allowable limits. A good example of this is a range in Prescott, Arizona, ran for 20 years with no filters. After 20 years, the range owners went to sell it. The bank did their due diligence and did an environmental study. In the environmental study, they found the roof was contaminated over EPA allowable limits, and most of the lot was also contaminated. They ended up taking 2 to 12 inches of the soils off the lot. They ended up tearing out the entire retail center because the outside airs had brought in the contaminant into the retail area. So it was, at the end of the day, a $540,000 repair to the building so that they could sell it.
And who paid for that?
The seller. So at the end of their whole career, they had a business for 20 years, and they ate all their profits up in mitigation.
So hence why it's important to have a filtration system. What are there? Is that HEPA, or what do you recommend as far as the discharge?
Final filter should always be HEPA, whether you're recirculating the air or discharging it outside. Right now, what we found out the best combination is a high-capacity bag filter followed by a HEPA filter. That's provided the very best dollar spend and the best service for owners. And a good example of that is we had a range in Texas that had two 12-lane bays. They had a 2-inch standard pleated pre-filter, a MERV 8. They had a 95% box filter, and then they had HEPA filters. They were changing their 2-inch pre-filters roughly every 8 to 10 days. Their mid-filters, their box filters, every 4 to 6 weeks, and their HEPA filters every 4 to 5 months.
When I guess. It depends on use, I'm assuming.
It's a relatively busy range.
Okay.
When they converted to a bag and a HEPA, they changed their bags every 10 to 12 weeks, and their HEPAs are now lasting close to 18 months. Their filter spend went down. It was reduced $40,000 a year.
So the bags are probably a little more expensive, but more efficient, and therefore saves you money.
They're actually the same price as that mid filter was. Oh. So it's just a great savings of money. They've come out with way better bags in the last several years.
Okay.
And it's just a phenomenal way to do it. So right now we recommend the two stages, bags followed by HEPAs.
Is there a company that you like, or do they just get it through you, or do they get through a local?
We don't sell filters because it's a constant moving target.
Okay.
Right now, Camfil makes a great bag filter, but there are several other companies that make a very good one as well. We encourage our customers, if they change brands, to let us. We monitor the system daily after they've changed their filters to let them know how they're working, and we monitor the performance. Once we find another good filter, we're happy to recommend them to people.
Okay. What kind of a staff do you have there to monitor that? You mentioned you have staff. What do you have? Who do you have there working for you?
We have four different people in our office that combine to provide the 24-hour support. We have one person that's dedicated full-time on just the controls. And then we have three others that some are installers of the control system. Some of the guys that do commissioning. And our engineer also does full support. So we have a lot of support.
So if you're East Coast, because you're in Chicago area, correct?
Yes.
So if you get a call from somebody after hours from somebody on the West Coast, you actually will answer the call then?
Our answering service calls the control tech on duty. And within typically 30 to 60 minutes, you get a call back. And we tie right in through the computer. And we help you get started. You know, we've had systems in Montana call us on Friday night at 8 o'clock and say our system just shut off. We look at it, we look at the trends and find out that the filters are blocked and the range was going to go positive to the surrounding areas. So we tell them to take a filter out, get them through the weekend, and they change their filters Monday. But we're there to support them.
Now you say go positive. Can you explain what that means, negative air pressure versus positive air pressure, and what's the difference, and why is that so important?
A range has to be negative to the surrounding spaces, which means there has to be more exhaust than supply. And the reason for that is if it's positive, there's more supply than exhaust, the extra pressure pushes air with contaminant into the other parts of the building. And that contaminant can wind up on surfaces where people will end up ingesting it. And the quickest way to get lead poisoning is ingesting it, way quicker than even breathing it.
Okay. So if some air is good, why don't they crank it up and just have it like a wind turbine then? What's the sweet spot there as far as that laminar airflow?
The sweet spot is 75 feet per minute. NIOSH, back in 1975, which is the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, came out with the standard that 75 feet is the optimal velocity, 75 feet per minute, at the firing line, with no less than 50 at any point. That is proven to have exposures below OSHA allowable limits all of the time. It's the basis for every standard GSA, military, every standard there is in range ventilation is based on the NIOSH standard.
Does that change at all from year to year? Has it been the same since 1970s when you started? Or
it has been the same since 1975 and nobody has ever come up. You know, there are people that say, well, we should be able to ventilate with slower velocities, but nobody has ever done proven it. Right now, I can tell you for a fact that if you design your system at 75 feet per minute, it will always, and the flow is even, no turbulence. It is always proven to meet exposures well below OSHA allowable limits. And you're allowed to be exposed to 30 micrograms of lead over a time-weighted 8-hour average before engineering controls are put in, which means like less time on the range. And you can do that up to 50 micrograms. When I tell you it's less than allowable limits, typically it's less than 0.6 micrograms over a time-weighted 8-hour average, and because that's less than detectable at that point.
So as a range owner, you're worried about staff because a customer really couldn't ingest enough lead to really hurt himself if he came every day for an hour or two, it sounds like.
If he came every day, he could probably breathe enough
lead. If a system was faulty, though.
If the system was faulty.
How do you know, as a shooter myself, if I walk into a range that I'm not sure if Kerry's smaller range did the error, how would I know that the air is working properly after I'm shooting? Am I going to shoot? Am I going to see smoke stay in my respiratory zone? Or is there some other kind of a way I can check?
You'll see smoke, you'll smell, you'll have that black stuff in your nose.
Okay.
You'll pretty much know a system that's not ventilated properly. And it's kind of interesting. Up until OSHA only applied to the respiratory zone of the employees, and up till 98, really, you only had to ventilate for your employees, not for the public, like in a commercial range. In 1998, the International Mechanical Code added a note for gun ranges that they had to be, the customers had to be below OSHA allowable limits of exposure as well. So as of 98, your customers also aren't allowed in spaces where they could be exposed over OSHA allowable limits.
What percent of systems you put in that are new versus retrofit? And I'm assuming retrofit would be a pain because you have existing problems. Do you do more new or more retrofits, or are they kind of 50-50?
Probably 50-50. Okay. And they're not more of a pain. In my career, I started out in regular heating and air conditioning, and I've done more retrofit in my career than I have new. So I'm right at home. Okay. I like retrofit. It's a little bit more of a challenge, but if you've done it your whole career, it's pretty easy.
Are there any other standards besides NIOSH that you use or that you help design a range?
NIOSH is the design standard we use. It's a suggested design standard.
Okay.
OSHA is the standard of what exposure occupants can have, and EPA is what's allowed to be pushed outside.
And you keep up with that, and you could probably exceed all those then?
Absolutely, yes.
How does one know that you're 75 feet per minute? What do you have as far as tools to really test that?
We use a Velgrid, and a Velgrid has 16 points where it reads the velocity and then averages them. It's extremely accurate. There used to be, the meter I used when I started doing balancing only had a single point, where if you moved your wrist a little, you could change the reading. Mm. A Velgrid's very accurate. When you're done doing, and you read it 1 foot, 3 foot, and 5 foot above the floor, which is prone, kneeling, and standing respiratory positions. They should average 75 feet per minute, and we use the military standard on every one of our jobs, no individual reading under 50 feet per minute. Then we always follow this with a smoke test, because no matter what, if the smoke is moving downrange, you're usually safe, and it's a good visual way to check up at the ceilings, places where we didn't physically take readings, but nowhere can we have turbulence enough where the most smoke would stand still or go backwards.
So hence, if I'm shooting and smoke is still billowing around my head, I know that it's either not your system or there's something that needs to be fixed.
Yes, exactly.
And so what would make that, let's say you put in a system, I assume if they don't change your filters, what would really affect that as far as having a system that should work but's not working?
In our system, our controls will actually shut the system off if the parameters get to be in an unsafe area. So you usually don't find our systems where there's smoke hanging out. You could have a damper that swings closed on the distribution, and one lane could be bad flow. You could have a range owner or the range staff put all kinds of stuff between the rear wall and the shooter, creating tons of turbulence. So there are things like that that could cause it.
Okay, and I'm assuming you put in a system, you teach somebody not to put garbage cans behind the shooter or in front of the...
We do, and when we go back, they're always back there again, and then we tell them to please move them, and it's a constant battle.
And I know you use a radial diffuser. What is that exactly, and how does that help with laminar airflow?
A radial diffuser is, ours is a half-round diffuser with double wall. And we use that versus the plenum walls that were popular in the 70s and 80s because the plenum wall, first of all, very few of them were designed properly, and most of them didn't work. The few that have been designed properly, the issues are typically there's doors and windows in the back wall, and those areas don't have the ventilation because of the doors and the windows, so you've got dead spots in the range. And the other problem is even if you have a side entrance and you've got a solid plenum wall designed properly, if a range officer stands in one place, the person that's in front of them is typically overexposed. So we just know, we think a radial's better. We know that the results have been better. The Navy has made it their standard. Most of the standards have made it the standard of the industry.
Okay. You'd mentioned that you have a 24-hour call, and I guess if I'm a do-it-yourself person and I have a local contractor, I'm assuming that's one thing different about you that they couldn't do. They don't have a 24-hour service. Is there something else that would kind of you want to steer people away from using local contractors as far as their control or designs?
You know, the problem is most local engineers may see one gun range in their lifetime. We're not smarter than that engineer. That engineer may be a much better engineer than we have. What separates us is after having done well over 1,000 ranges, we have a ton of experience. We have a ton of lessons learned. We've made mistakes. We've fixed them. We've seen problems. We've changed them. After having done 1,000 ranges since 1995, we've just learned enough that we're better at one thing than the local guy. And it's also put us in a position, since we only do one thing, if the design is the same, we're usually the same price or cheaper. Even though we travel, we use local installation contractors. We don't send our guys out of Chicago to put in ductwork. We have local people make it and install it.
Keep costs down, I'm assuming.
Keep costs down. We supervise it. At the end of the day, we have our guys do the startup, the critical parts of it, and we're the same price or cheaper.
Do you typically just do the U.S.? Have you gone outside of the U.S.?
We've done several projects outside the country. We're doing more now. We've been to Bahrain, Italy, Qatar. I've looked at projects in Japan. We've done work in Hawaii. I know that's not outside the U.S., but it sure seems like it when you're there.
And you can still call in and dial in overseas, I'm assuming, too, as long as you have an internet connection?
Absolutely, yes.
That's fantastic.
We did a project, probably our most challenging project. We ventilated a bunker on the side of a cliff on the Rock of Gibraltar for the Ministry of Defense for England. And our special forces train there 1 week a year. So to thank them, our government did the ventilation for them.
Wow.
And they had no power. I mean, it was a very unusual job. It was very hard to work. At one point, I was in there working, and somebody started training.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I'm standing behind concrete screaming, please don't shoot.
Is there a favorite place or install that you've done that you can talk about?
I don't know if there's a favorite one. I think my favorite jobs overall have been the military bases. I've learned so much about our military that I didn't know because I didn't serve. So it's been a really good education for me to get to meet a ton of our military people and to work on the bases and get to see how it all works. You have a whole different respect when you get to see it firsthand.
Right. Well, interesting, because I know as a shooter, I enjoy that. And you shoot, and actually I've seen you shoot, and you're a very good shooter, but that's really not your passion. So why air systems for ranges then?
My business partner, Pat Tovey, and I have talked a lot about this. And one of our passions for this is we want to make it safer for the law enforcement and for the military. These guys go out and put it on the line every day, and we don't want them to get sick while they're training.
That's excellent. As far as technology, back in the 70s, what has changed over the years, or has it been the same? Has it always been that same, or have you used different? Now, you said bag filters, I guess, that some things do change, but has it been the same since all those years, or is?
Pretty much the same. Obviously, direct digital controls advance constantly. It's a constant moving target. You have to be constantly on top of the changes from the control manufacturers to know what the next upgraded control is doing, and they eventually eliminate some of the older ones, so you've got to constantly be upgrading those. Filter technology changes. But as far as the machines and the basic technology, the basic design, it's the same now as it was when I started in 95 and when NIOSH set the standard in 75.
Okay. I know you've been asked to speak at a lot of different, we're here in Denver currently for the NRA RDoC. What other boards or do you help kind of sit on to help educate people on the safety of and the importance of HVAC?
I've worked with the NSSF. I do some white papers for them. I've done some presentations with them. I've worked with Clark Nixon at helping write the Unified Force Criteria. I've worked with GSA to write the criteria for the General Service Administration. Worked with the NRA to redo their range source book. So I work with most of the major groups. And again, it's not that Carrie's is something special. It's just we have a lot of experience, a lot of good lessons learned. And we do this because we want to give back to our industry that's been so good to us.
Excellent. Do you remember your first range install, where that was or what it was?
I do. In 1995, we did a project at Great Lakes Naval Base that was a plan and specification project that we didn't design. And I was young and arrogant, and I told the Navy, this won't work. And then when it didn't work, I laughed at them. And in my youth and my arrogance, I told them I could fix it, and I got really lucky. That job led to another Navy job, which led to another Navy job. And after 5 years, we actually quit doing standard ventilation work and focused now just for our construction side of our company, just on small arms range ventilation.
That's a great story. So as far as a range owner who wants to put a fan behind the shooter, obviously now what you're saying, that's rife with problems. So if you are a shooter going to a range that has a fan, should that individual ask for the money and leave?
If you're going to shoot a half hour a week, you can't breathe enough contaminant to get your blood lead levels up. So to answer your question, if you're going to go in there and you want to shoot quickly, it's not the end of the world.
Okay.
But a fan creates turbulence. Long term, that's not good for you. You don't want to breathe tons of lead. When you're outdoors, it's good. And if you're inside, I would encourage you to be somewhere that's ventilated properly.
Interesting you said that. And I'm assuming with grandchildren, if you went to a place that had a fan behind, you probably would turn around and go back, I'm assuming, with younger children.
Younger children or women that could get pregnant, yes. Lead is way more dangerous for kids and for women who could be or who are or could be pregnant.
All right, Bill, you said as far as bringing your grandchildren into a range that has a fan, the concern there was what again if you have young children?
Yes, with the young children, or with children and with women, or women that could get pregnant, lead is very much more dangerous than to adult males. So I would not put my kids in an unsafe area. Either it's got to be a well-ventilated range, or it would have to be outdoors.
Okay, and outdoors, if we're to shoot outdoors with ourselves or with young children, is there no concerns at all with lead?
As long as you're not in a confined area. So there are some outdoor ranges that have tried to confine the safety zone using sidewalls and roofs and baffles, but they're not indoor. They're just fully contained outdoor ranges. Those could put you overexposed for lead, but in wide open area, you're fine.
I know as a shooter, we typically would always, when we leave, and if I'm bringing my family, we would always wash our hands with cold water, which I'm assuming has something to do with pores with washing. But I'm assuming either like a sticky mat or something to wipe your feet off before you go into your car would also be a good idea too.
Absolutely. You don't want to bring it home. In a well-ventilated range, if you're not going down range, that area behind the firing line should have no lead in.
Okay. So being extra cautious, it's not going to hurt, but...
No. And again, if you're there as a casual shooter, you don't have the same issues you have as an employee where you're in the environment all the time. That is really important, especially as an employee with a family, with wife and children. You don't want to bring it home. I would encourage you to wash your clothes in another washing machine. I wouldn't use the same one.
As a shooter, as an employee, or both?
as an employee.
Okay, because your exposure is much higher than...
Right.
Good point.
As a shooter, you're just not there often enough, unless you're a competition shooter that's practicing 20, 30, 40 hours a week.
Right. This is a leading question because I know how big some of these units are, but if can you kind of explain the size of your units and why they're so huge?
Sure. The unit equipment size is based on the width of the range. To size a gun range, you do width times height times 75 feet per minute. So, for example, if you have a 10-lane range with 4-foot lanes, 40 feet times 8-foot tall times 75 feet per minute is 24,000 cubic feet per minute for the supply, and you design the exhaust at 10% more.
Okay.
So 26,400.
And that simple math is important because if that's not, it's going to blow it back into the range or contaminate your classrooms. Is that correct?
That's the negative pressure. That's why there's more exhaust, absolutely. And that 75, that math function will give you the 75 feet per minute. That's the basis for all design. Now, if you do a purge-style equipment, your supply unit is probably, I'd call it 7 feet wide, 5 feet tall, and with the outdoor air hood, close to 15 foot long. Your exhaust equipment with the filter rack, the exhaust fan, and ductwork is close to 15 foot long and probably about 8 feet wide.
Can you explain what purge is versus like a recirc and what all the different types of systems you offer?
Sure. A purge system is 100% outside air. It's heated, cooled, or just ventilated into your building. It goes through your range, it's filtered, and it goes right back outdoors. So the air is only in your range at a 25-yard range for about 85 seconds, and it's a once-through system. The air doesn't recirculate. Those are great in San Diego and places with very mild temperatures. We also find them to be very good systems up in the northern climates that are heating only. Once you get into they're also very good for evaporative cooling systems, which can be used in the desert-type areas or very dry areas, Utah, Colorado, other very dry areas of our country. There's not many of them, but it's a great system for there.
Otherwise, you're pumping more moisture in the range, which is probably not good for back east.
Right. And then once you start getting into mechanical cooling, then the best thing to do is recirculation. We recirculate 75% of the air. We always bring in 25% of the outside air because even HEPA filters can't filter out carbon monoxide.
Okay.
So we use 25% outside air to dilute the carbon monoxide and keep it below OSHA allowable limits. And it also dilutes the odors because that's the other problem. When you recirculate, HEPA filters do not remove odors.
Okay.
Now, that equipment, when you get to a 10-lane range, a cooling unit is probably 26 feet long, 8 foot tall, 8 foot wide. And a filtration unit, because there's two units on each system, a filtration unit for the same 40-foot wide range is probably 26 foot long, 11 feet wide, and 8 foot tall.
And what's the weight?
8 to 10,000 each.
So it has to be engineered prior to you showing up, because if your roof... You said put on the roof, but your roof is not engineered for that. That's a major concern.
Absolutely. You have to work with the structural engineers, the architects. You have to figure out where the ductwork's going to go, if there's room inside the building, if the ductwork has to be run exposed on your roof. You need to involve either the range ventilation contractor early on in the process. You have so many different choices to make, and all those choices will cost you different amounts of money in different areas.
Because you would need a certain height of a ceiling, correct? Because if you come in, if it's too low, you can't put your ductwork in, correct?
I can't put it inside. I'd have to put it on the roof, which is going to require more maintenance. It's going to eventually leak because the sunshine on ductwork will make it expand and contract and the caulk joints break. The insulated duct in the roof is more money. But if you build the building tall enough to put the ductwork inside the building costs more money. So your design professionals have to look at all those different options and come up with what's the best long-term. And you have to also include the future maintenance in the whole picture. So you need a good team to put the whole picture together. It's just not as simple as, oh, I'm going to put it on the roof and put all my ductwork on the roof so I don't build my building as tall. That's fine, but you have to look at all the future problems that's going to create.
Do you like roof versus a curb mount, or does it matter to you?
I prefer roof mount with the ductwork inside. I think that's best long-term for the customer.
Okay. Now, with the size of that,
as a range owner, I'm thinking, my gosh, it's got to be so expensive to run. What's kind of the operational cost on something like that?
That's a great question. If you have a purge heating only system, the cost of the gas, electric, and filters is about $1 per lane per hour, assuming the lanes are 4 foot wide.
Okay.
If you have a heating and cooling recirculation system, the operation cost for gas, electric, and filters is about $2 per lane per hour. And that's based on the total annual price of gas, electric, and filters divided equally across all your hours. Seasonally, it's going to go up and down, but that's your average cost.
How are you getting that number? Is that something that you just kind of guesstimate, or?
Yeah, I originally did calculations, and I used to tell owners $3 to $3.50 an hour, because I know they'd forget other stuff when they were trying to plan. The reality is I've gone back to all the range owners now that have these systems, and they've given me real numbers. So the numbers I give you are on the high end of the real numbers that actual customers have come back with.
Okay. So having AC is nice. It is going to cost you double to run it, but is there any time you would recommend a range owner or even a law enforcement agency to say, hey, you know what, it's not worth the money, or is it something you think is always nice to have as far as an option?
In a city like Chicago, we have an average of 20 days a year over 90 degrees. I would tell the average law enforcement not to put in air conditioning. For the price of the system originally, the price of the maintenance, and the price of the operation, they don't use it enough. They don't have to use it those 20 days in the summer, or they can use it early in the morning, or they can use it late at night. They don't have to use it in 2 in the afternoon when it's 90 plus degrees on those 20 days.
Right. So operational cost is double. Is having an AC versus a purge double the cost, or is it just depending on all the different factors?
It's not double, but it's about $10,000 more per lane than for an air conditioning system than a heating only purge.
So that's something to think about before you make that decision then.
It is. And again, just make sure that the numbers you get from your design professional, that they're real numbers, that they're all inclusive and they include all of the cost. Because there are some claims out there that things are done really cheap, and energy is energy. It costs X amount of dollars to move X amount of air, period. I mean, the horsepower is the horsepower. It doesn't change.
Right. You know, I know you're winding down your title as the president and CEO of that, and one day you will retire. But looking back, are you glad you took the path of the HVAC world? Would you change it if you had to go back again?
I wouldn't change a thing. I love my job. I love the people we met. I have the people in our company are great guys. Young guys coming up, my business partner, all of them are phenomenal, and I wouldn't change a thing.
Good for you. You ready to pass the torch and to move on to something better?
It's fun. I'm starting to pass the torch on now. I've got a great project manager, a great salesman, a great engineer, and I'm starting to get into more of the business development side, and I'm starting to take it easy a little bit more, and I've got a great team behind me, and I watch them, and I watch them individually, and I think it's really awesome. I think they're in a lot of ways better than I've ever been.
Well, and I guess that's the greatest compliment is if you do, once you retire and leave, that the company will keep on going and prospering without you, even though you know you've done a lot to make it successful. What's as we wrap up here, what's a perfect day for you? So as you're looking to retire one day, what would be a perfect day for Bill Provinger?
Grilling a great meal on some of my grills.
How many grills do you have?
I have three.
You have three. And do you grill weekly, daily?
At least weekly. I'd love to be daily.
How many hours per week do you actually spend on the grill?
Right now, maybe 6 to 8, but I would love it to be more.
And if you're not grilling, I've heard that you like a good drone flight. Is that correct?
I love playing with... I have several drones. They're really fun to fly. And they're fun to take pictures, they're fun to put the movies together, and if I have the rest of my life, I won't get good at it, but it sure is fun trying.
Bill, I appreciate your time today. I'd love to do another podcast with you on grilling, and we'll call it another segment, but thank you for your time, and as always, appreciate the time together.
Thank you, Mike. Pleasure to work with you.